Hey, welcome everybody. Today you are listening to Pop Sub, which is with myself, Christopher Furman, and my compadre, James Fryer. And we're just here to kind of talk about what's new this week in entertainment and media, but not necessarily. This week, we're going to talk about a show we've seen that caught our eye.
Is Christopher here yet? Because I'm not waiting for him to start. He's got to be here. He's got to wait for me. I'm not starting without him, okay?
Hello, James.
Oh, good. He's here. Hi, Christopher.
We're talking about what today?
Mythic Quest.
And
Raven's Banquet.
And the plot of this story revolves around a very vain man. And that's one of the lines he said in the TV show, right?
Well, they both said it. Both the two main characters, Poppy and Ian, not Ian, Ian,
right.
are on a Zoom call. And they're all both arguing to their moderator, say, I'm not waiting for him. I'm not waiting for her. He's got to wait for me. So that's what we're talking about. It's Mythic Quest, and it's a comedy on Apple TV Plus about a game development studio.
Which is kind of cool because I have never seen any type of a show that revolves around a video setup, right? I mean, video
company. Your video
company.
Game studio, right. Well yeah. I try not to get too involved with the other people's reviews, but after I wrote up my notes, I did a quick look and looked at some of the reviews, and it was kind of annoying. That the nerds are like, this isn't the way a real game development studio set up. This is so unreal. I don't want to watch this nonsense. It's like, guys, this is not a documentary, okay? This is fiction.
Well,
wrap your tiny little gamer heads around that.
Don't be too hard on the nerds, because I think once in a blue moon, we get accused of being in that
okay,
group.
Okay, I have lots of nerd points to go through on this show. But I don't remember the name of the show, but I think it was in the 90s. They had a cop show with cops on bikes. I'm thinking, okay, I'm a cyclist. I'm all in for this. And I was totally over and fine with the idea that they weren't being all that realistic about how this would go down.
And your point is basically, as great of an idea that this is, it's probably not too realistic.
Well, of course not. You got to let that go.
It is a comedy.
Right? It's entertainment. It's like the same nerds arguing about Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining. It's like, it's not like the book. Of course it's not like the book, you moron. It's a movie.
If you wanted it to be like a book, read the book.
I may have had too much coffee this morning.
Perhaps.
I'm not sure, though. Can you help me here? How much coffee am I supposed to have? I'm sorry. I'm getting way off track here. I just want to, you know, we didn't discuss this beforehand, but I'm going to go ahead and say, Christopher.
Yes.
We're going to do a mild spoiler alert for this episode because there are a couple of big spoilers, which we won't get to. I don't think they're really that important, so I just want to skip them. And so we're going to talk about the show as if you've seen it, but if you haven't seen it, it's not going to be a big deal because we're not going to hit the big spoilers.
Which is the case probably for most of these pop sub podcasts.
I don't know. It depends. There are definitely spoilers. Like on Ted Lasso, the last one we watched, that there were some spoilers that could, you know, really change how you watch the show.
Yeah. So let's run down the plot.
Well, I think I just did. It was a comedy about a game development studio. I can say that the first thing that hit me about the show in general was, you know, it's funny. It's more of a character-based kind of show, which
is typical of the actor there, Rob McElhenney.
I guess so. Like I said, what hit me, but the thing that also hits you with about the show, really, it's about narcissism.
Which is so funny because there are shows that have a narcissist as one of the characters, but what's funny about this show, there are different types of narcissists and in this plot. And what's so funny is that you kind of have them competing, but at like a different level.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Ian, the main guy, this is his baby. This is the show is all about him doing Mythic Quest, the game, which is a massive multiplayer online game. It's the most successful thing that's going on in gaming at the moment, you know, in this universe.
Right, and that's the actor Rob.
It's the actor Rob. So it's mostly about his narcissism and people having to deal with it because it's just so overwhelming. But there are more subtle shades of it, and it's interesting to watch how the characters develop. The lead programmer is a young Australian by the name of Poppy, and she gets a little crazier as the show goes on because she's getting drawn further and further into his orbit.
Well, I think she also has a mild form of narcissist because she keeps wanting to take credit for her work, but she's...
No. I think you misread that. I'm going to disagree with you. You're wrong. She's just trying to put her stamp on the game. And I think, you know, they right off the bat, she's trying to do this. Like, she's basically implementing his vision as he sees it. And then she adds at the very last minute before they have this huge update, a shovel, which she just loves the shovel. And what happens to the shovel?
It gets very distorted.
It gets bastardized. Let's just be clear. She wants it as a world-building tool, right? So you can actually manipulate your surroundings with it. So you can. This is a whole new mechanic for the game.
Right, they're kind of playing with Minecraft there, right? That's what I kind of got.
Well, yeah, there are different games that you can do this in. You know, Halo is a very common game. You can actually go into a mode and create your own map. So it's there's a lot of cross-pollination there. But let me pull up the line here. The line is, as she's introducing it and talking about how exciting it is to be a world-building tool, you know, Ian and his lead writer, who's this old crazy guy, CW, start talking about how they can make it better. He's like, Ian's like, yeah, that's interesting, but it's not quite right. How could we make that better? And the old guy is like, oh, the shovel needs a backstory.
Right.
Yeah, how do you give a shovel a backstory? But, you know, he makes it work. And eventually they completely bastardize it into his own thing. And it becomes a huge hit in the game. But, you know, Poppy's left behind thinking, well, that's not the shovel I wanted. That wasn't my shovel.
And let's just face it. She has good starter ideas, but they're not finishers. And that's what's kind of a big play in this show.
Well, no, I'm going to defend Poppy here. I think her shovel idea was an excellent, I mean, to add a world building element to it was a really big idea. And it didn't need to be turned into a weapon, but you know, that's what went. And of course, once it's turned into a weapon, it becomes super popular and becomes like the most popular thing in the game.
Well, a funny thing also that takes a turn if you start watching more than a few of the series, you see also doesn't dwell in current events, but it definitely touches them. So during this whole pandemic and virus thing, they have this whole plot line where they start developing in the game a thing called Blood Ocean.
Well, that's the interesting question, right? I mean, this was all going on pre-pandemic, basically. They were making this in 2019. So my question is, did they...
And this whole virus is being broadcast at the same time the broadcast on the news of the virus is coming out.
My question is, when they wrote the Blood Ocean storyline, was there even a pandemic? And if there wasn't, what would they have been doing? You know, I think it may have just been, quote, a happy accident.
No. They were actually... had complaints about them filming while the pandemic was going on.
Well, that comes up later. That comes up in the final episode.
You know, it comes
in the final. No. They only mention that in the final episode, which is post quarantine or during quarantine.
Of course, you're right.
Of course, I'm right.
Well, so the show actually came out, or it got premiered February 7th of last year, which was kind of interesting. Before they even came out with the premiere of the show, Apple says they're going to do a second season.
I think they've done that. I think they did that with Ted Lasso too. I think they've in fact announced a third season for Ted Lasso. Oh, and that's interesting since we did Ted Lasso last time. How back to back, this is a good back to back review because Ted Lasso is the non-narcissist and Ian is the he is the ultimate narcissist.
That's so funny. Disney always has a master plan. That's how I feel about things. But I honestly think they were granting this show, Mythic Quest, a second season because, quite frankly, Apple just doesn't have that much content.
Well, that could be part of it, but I think it hits their notes that it's a good show. Now, for fans, where are the creators of this show? The people driving the message of this, where are they from, Christopher?
Well, that's really interesting to me because I'm always interested on kind of on the back end of how things work. So there's a show that you and I both love called Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And the company that produced that show is also the same company that's producing this show, which is called Three Arts. Now, what's interesting about Three Arts is that Three Arts a lot of them are ones that you like, James.
Like Lisa, what? What? You don't know what shows I like.
I don't?
No, you tell me what shows you think I like.
Do you like Parks and Recreation?
That's my favorite show.
Okay, there's one. Do you like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Hang on. Did they did that one?
Yes. Yes. Didn't you say you like The Unbreakable Kimmy Smith?
The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's just a few. I might know you better than you think,
man.
James.
This is like conspiracy, man. They're behind all my favorite shows, man. They're like in my head, man. What's going on, man?
Maybe.
I need more coffee.
Maybe you do. I don't know.
Gotta figure it out.
Maybe they're following you on your
Zoom.
No, they're watching you on your TikTok account. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All those shows came out before I was on TikTok.
I don't know how, but you're just the cool guy. That's all.
No, I'm totally not cool.
All right. Just to kind of run down a couple shows that you probably don't like that they do is, I like King of the Hill, which they also did. The Office they were part of. Do you remember
American?
The American version. Do you remember the show Everybody Hates Chris?
No.
Oh, anyways. And they did a couple. I was surprised how many shows they've produced that you've actually liked. So it doesn't surprise me.
I had no idea they were that big.
Three arts. I was surprised too. They've actually been around quietly in the background for 30 years.
That changes things. But I was gonna note that if you're a fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, that's where the obvious connection was, because I'm not inside Hollywood kind of guy. I don't know all the backdoor dealings and whatnot. But don't expect that to be this. Don't expect It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia to be, or vice versa.
No, but I thought some of the gags were set up very similar to Always Sunny in Philadelphia, especially because the character,
Ian.
Yeah. The main character, Ian Grimm, which is funny, has the last name Grimm, because his kind of comedic play has a style to it. You can definitely see it in this.
I wouldn't push that too hard because it's such a different show, and it's just like it's hard to explain, but there's so much more rawness and politically incorrectness in It's Always Sunny than there is in Mythic Quest. It's certainly a lot more. Like, you could see Mythic Quest being on TV, like regular broadcast TV. You could not see It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on regular TV.
Well, another part of the story, though, I think maybe even the tone is another one of the executive producers on the show is Charlie Day, which is also one of the actors and executive producers of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So I thought that was kind of interesting also.
Yeah, that's the one I noticed because I usually don't look at the credits too carefully, but his name jumped out. He's the only one whose name I know from that show. I know all of them by face, and I'll watch anything that they're in, but he's the only one whose name I actually know. So there are narcissists, but there are also different interesting character types in that. And I will say my favorite character of the series was Jo, the assistant, because she is such a delightful psychotic. It's hard not to fall in love with her.
By season two, she's going to become a more primary character.
I don't know. I think she's really well suited where she is right now because I don't want to see too much more of her because I'm worried that she could literally kill me with her eyes. She just looks at the camera and you think you're about to die.
Well, we're coming up to the end. So really quick, I just would like to very quickly, James, talk about the last episode. It's kind of funny and unique, but it was really capturing a lot of things that were current.
Yeah, it was basically a Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
And it is a Zoom meeting gone horribly, horribly wrong.
But they did do something in there that was really cool.
I can't remember. The Rube Goldberg contraption?
Yeah, where they had it all the... Well, basically, they had a ball. Was it a ball?
Yeah, let's say ball.
So they had a ball, and it went from one person's house or one person's Zoom...
Screen
into the next... Which was really kind of interesting because when they shot that, wrote it all in 3 weeks, all in quarantine, and they figured how to do this whole last kind of a special episode, which I thought was, at first I'm like, oh God, this is going to be so stupid. But It quickly caught my eye, and I stayed till the very end. And they did that whole thing, everything, in 3 weeks, writing and everything. I thought that was amazing.
Well, that quarantine episode I thought was really amazing, especially the Zoom calls. But I wasn't really that impressed with the Rube Goldberg setup because it wasn't believable to me that they could actually do that. That kind of thing takes so much setup and practice that you can't. Well, it doesn't matter.
Just to be clear, this was Apple TV, and they did all of that with Apple products and iPhones. Oh, well, so that was real.
Let me nerd out for a second there. Throughout the show, I'm wondering, is Alienware a sponsor of this show? Because all the nerds are running around with Alienware laptops. Until the end, the last quarantine episode, suddenly Poppy, the lead developer who's been on Alienware up until this point, is suddenly on a Mac.
Very interesting. I noticed there was nothing but Apple products on the show we reviewed last time. Ted Lasso had Apple products, which I thought was kind of funny, but it wasn't out of place because there are so many Apple products in the UK.
Yeah. But I did want to talk about let's not forget episode 5, A Dark Quiet Death. completely takes you out of the game development, the comedy game development story, and puts you in a completely different story. It's basically a throwback to a 90s story. They follow the arc of another game development studio, but with a very different tenor. They're basically goths who create their own game.
Yes.
It's very dark. There are no winners, but it slowly over time, day by day, breaks down and just becomes the worst kind of...
It came very California, in my opinion, very LA.
I wouldn't say LA, but well, yeah, I guess there's an element to that, but it just becomes very corporate taken over, and all the original soul of the game is crushed and replaced by, you know, whatever Hollywood can sell. I thought was really interesting. They were really kind of spot on with a lot of stuff they did in the background.
I don't know if you noticed this, but they had plots going on at the same time. Like, they also have the lesbian girl who's in love with, we're not sure if she's lesbian or not, girl. And they have this whole, like, little other story going on with these two game testers. And I really felt for that part because for a very short period, I worked for a studio where I was the beta tester for DVDs. And it's not the funnest job. But you're into it because... Well, in their case, they were into it because they're into video games. I was into it because I was a movie buff and I got paid to watch movies.
Well, I thought that was a pretty cute interaction they had between the testers. But I was trying to finish my point.
Sorry.
About in the background details, I was really taken by the fact that this very dark, gothy, kind of goth-esque game, they were very specific. Even though it was a one-off episode and it was, I wouldn't say a throwaway, but it's, you know, it's not part of the regular series. They were very particular about what they had in the background. They had Egon Schiele paintings, which he's not necessarily goth, but he's not a light guy. And then, wow, they threw in Goya's painting of Saturn eating his children or son, which is one of the darkest paintings there is. And just to have that in the background, I thought just really kind of highlighted the craft.
Yeah,
and
the stage production I thought was really good too. There was a lot of details. I was watching a lot of the background because, like, oh my gosh, I know what that is. Oh, look at that. So there was a lot of details in the background. It was nice that they had a good person in charge of that.
They do tie that in because the new game, the Mythic Quest, is actually using the same studio space as the A Dark Quiet Death was using. A little bit of a lukewarm start. But the last episode was so damn funny.
Yes.
And A Dark Quiet, I thought, was really good too. So two thumbs up. And I know I'm just feel like I sound like a shill because I think I've given everything two thumbs up now. But, you know, throw me a bad show and I'll give it a thumbs down. Happily.
So you're rating this as?
Two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. So I really like the show too. And I totally agree with you. I thought the first few episodes, they were a little slow. I was kind of just interested in the show because of the subject matter. And I think it got better, like so many new shows get better as the episodes go on. So I'm going to go ahead and give this a solid two thumbs up. It's my second show with two thumbs up. Though one of them could be going down because this beginning few episodes were a little slow, but I'm still giving it two solid thumbs up, completely based on entertainment value.
There's one last thing I'm going to throw in. It's the David, the office manager, basically the office manager, executive manager. Poor guy. He's actually also a guy from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He was the priest who they basically just completely destroyed and turned into a
urchin. I didn't catch that.
And he plays almost the same guy. He's this completely wound up middle-aged white guy who just gets completely dunked on over and over again. And he is the best actor for portraying that sort of nervousness.
Funny. I didn't put that together. Well, because there's so many years have gone by. He looks older for one. And then as he got older, they destroyed him till he didn't even look like himself. Well, well, that's it for this episode. I'm so glad we got a chance again to talk this week, James.
Thanks, Christopher. Sorry for running a little long.
That's okay. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, James.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Till next week.
Pop Sub Podcast has been brought to you by Markers in Motion. To contact Pop Sub Podcast, go to info@popsubpodcast. Thank you.
Is it gonna last with the freaky cast?
Wonder where I'm going.
Pops up cast. Pops up cast. Pops up cast.
Wonder where I'm going. Wonder where I'm going.
Pops up cast. Pops up cast. Pops up cast. Pops up cast. Pops up cast.
This episode of Pop Sub Podcast has been sponsored by GoRageous, the outrageous floor, that's GoRageous.com, and Anchor. Without it, all of this would not be possible. Thank you.
But I don't mean to nerd out too much here, but the one thing I can agree with the nerds about, or they, none of them complained about it, but the real obvious lack of an illustrator. I mean, a company like this, a game development company, would live and die based on the illustrators and what the content they come up with. They illustrate the content before the developers can get to make the content. But that seems like the one thing that's really missing from the show is, where the hell are the illustrators? They have all these other roles. From even the HR person shows up. They have they can find room for an HR person, but not for the illustrator who does all the work on making on what these things are going to look like. Come on. Give me a break.
Right.
And it kind of ties into the thing that I hated the most about the show, which was the third tester they brought in, Lou. I think the show would actually be better off without him. He rubs me the wrong way in every possible way. And most importantly, though, I just don't think he adds anything to the show. It's like they have that toxic masculinity from in other areas, and he's not really a full-blown toxic man. He's like a mansplainer. But the fact that they put him in, but not an illustrator, just replace him with an illustrator or make him the illustrator. He can be a jerk, but still be a great illustrator. Give me an illustrator. That's all I want.
This episode of Pop Sub Podcast has been sponsored by GoRageous, the outrageous floor. That's GoRageous.com and Anchor. Without it, all of this would not be possible. Thank you.